If you've been around here for any amount of time, you know I'm a huge fan of Cut. This is where I've been doing my sports betting, thanks to the Cut app. That's K-U-T-T. The pricing is fantastic. 3% commission on these markets. It's peer-to-peer betting, so you can post a bet publicly and have somebody match that. I'd say bets get matched 90% of the time if you're offering a standard industry price, or you can challenge somebody. Challenge me if you want. I'm on there at Looms Boldly. I love to bet baseball, especially day baseball. If you have a random Wednesday or Thursday game and you offer me a fair price, I'm pretty much taking the other side. It's a lot of fun, Cut. And again, great financial terms. And maybe best of all, you have an opportunity to be handed free money with our promo code ITM24. When you download the app, do that for a 10% deposit bonus up to $1,000. You get a free $100 to get going. Another fun thing about Cut, you can bet on anything with a verifiable outcome. It's not just sports. So it brings in politics and pop culture and a lot of other fun things around those lines. So download the Cut app today. And I'll see you on there. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our show for Monday, April 29th. Bit of a different type of a deal today. We're going to make this our Oaks preview audio. We will go into the Oaks again as part of our final answer show, but this is a chance for JK and I to talk about every horse that's running in this year's Kentucky Oaks. We're going to start the show with that. Then we're going to have another segment later that's also a double up of YouTube content on the pace situation in the Kentucky Derby. So stick around and check that out as well. Lots of good stuff happening on the YouTube channel, and want to put in a nice plug for the Derbython that we're going to be a part of with ABR and DRF, the place with the letters. And we are reuniting this week. It's going to be fun. That's Wednesday starting at noon, 24 hours of Derby and Oaks coverage. You'll hear us talk about that in the other videos as well. So I'm not going to belabor the point. We do have another sponsor to hear from before we get the show started. So let's go to that right now. Today's show also brought to you by the Preakness and the Preakness Future Wager. Preakness Future Wager sponsored our Monster Pod audio version that dropped over the weekend. Folks have been checking out. Everybody we spoke with, we're making a bet on this Preakness Future Wager. If you listen to that show, you can hear their ideas or come up with ideas of your own. The Preakness Future Wager is open until the weekend. It's a drop down on your ADW. It seems to be popping up in a prominent position. This is your opportunity to say, hey, maybe Fierceness is the real deal. Maybe he's going to roll and go on and win the Preakness in 2 weeks' time. Or maybe you want to sit on one of the horses who's waiting in the wings, like Muth. Whatever your opinion is, you can express it in the Preakness Future Wager. We got great value in this bet last year. It was one of those, unfortunately, you can't eat value things when First Mission didn't run. But we were on at 7-1 on a horse that was would have been a 2-1 shot had those physical issues not come. Oh, well, that was last year. This is this year. Hoping to be able to make some big money in the Preakness Future Wager. And speaking of the Preakness, you should be looking to attend. It's a great time from indoor dining in the grandstand to premium outdoor viewing from the first turn suites and iconic Turfside Terrace. Guests can enjoy everything the Preakness has to offer. Second jewel of the Triple Crown on the third Saturday in May, Saturday, May 18th. Find out more, including ticket options, over at Preakness.com. And obviously, we will be covering the day and the race in full right here on the In the Money Media Network. Now back to the show. We are here for our Oak Show 2024 style PTF. Back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker. Once again, joined by a man coming to us from, is it an undisclosed location on the planet Texas? JK, where are you today?
No, it's my favorite move at a hotel. Hotel rooms have horrible lighting, right? So it's like when you're doing videos like this, it's terrible. You get backlit. The bed is in the background, which I've always thought to be very creepy. Like someone was just laying there half clothed earlier. So I hate doing it in hotel rooms. So what I like to do is I go down to like the conference level floor and I just start randomly pulling on doors, and it's inevitable that you find one that's open here a little. And this is what you do. You just show up and you just get into a room like this and hope that no one comes in here and knocks on the door. And that's how we're doing it.
if we get interrupted, that's why. So we opted not to do the Oaks Monster Pod this year. We're doing this show essentially instead, where we go through all the horses. And it was a combination of things. You know, you as an audience have told us over the years that you don't listen to or watch the Oaks content nearly as much as the Derby content. And with doing the 20 individual videos and all this extra Derby content, it felt a little bit like overkill. But obviously, we didn't want to give the Oaks short shrift in the sense of, you know, we want to be chiming in on everyone. The top 10 Oaks video we did well. You have any second thoughts about the little shortcut we took here, not doing 14, 16 different Oaks segments and just sort of lumping it into the one here?
No, do I want to do 7 more interviews and 14 more thumbnails? No, I'm good.
So really, we did. You have the real answer now. We did it this way because Jonathan is lazy. It's nothing to do with me. I kid. Let's talk about this field. And we're going to do it a little differently than our usual analysis. We're going to go through the field, and then we're going to give a conclusion. We won't be able to help ourselves. I'm sure we're going to tip our hands as we do it. But let's start off with a runner called Tappet Jannali, who drew the one runner in this one post in this race, one who took the Arkansas route, solid in the frame efforts down there in Arkansas. And I really thought the run was pretty good, I thought, in the last race, sticking on well late despite a wide trip. But the problem is, this is the Kentucky Oaks, and like little subtle wise guy angles for horses that look too slow, that's a trap I don't really want to go down. So even though I respect this runner and could see betting on her at some point this summer, I ain't going to be in the Kentucky Oaks for me. Did you have anything to add on Tappet Jannali, JK?
I don't know. For the sake of the 13 to 14 other horses we're going to talk about, I'll be quick about this one. This horse has not won as a three-year-old, has had 4 opportunities, and has not come within 3.5 lengths of the leader. Now faces the biggest and best group that she's faced so far. Pass.
Okay, there you go. We're JK not biting on Tappet Jannali. We'll go to the 2-hole and a horse called Jinjin, who takes the New York path to these Kentucky Oaks, having run in the money in 3 New York prep races. The best run was last time in the Gazelle, but again, figure-wise, form-wise, just leaves her behind the best of these. But maybe you could make a case that if they do a sort of a hold-up ground-saving run, they could try to just run into the money and maybe get, you know, minor placing in a race like the Kentucky Oaks would do wonders for Jinjin as a broodmare. But I wasn't seeing a whole lot beyond that to get me excited in this spot. Am I underrating Jinjin?
No, I mean, I like to say this a lot. I've seen worse horses win this race. And so there's always the opportunity. These are 3-year-olds. They can always kind of take a step up. But what I've seen from Jinjin so far doesn't give me the feeling that she's going to run that well. I understand why she's here. I understand why she runs. And I think she actually worked pretty good. If you watched that work with her and Tarifa last time at Churchill Downs, I thought she worked pretty darn good there. So maybe she is improving, but she does feel like more of an underneath type to me. The biggest thing in her corner is likely Ferran Giroux and Brad Cox.
Number 3 is Where's My Ring, the horse that won the Gazelle last time in a run that I thought was pretty impressive, and it demonstrated both speed and stamina. Here's the thing, though. That was a maiden win, and she was bet, which says something about the courses, I think, that she was running against. Definitely one that's going to have to step up again into the deeper water here. I'm a little cynical, as you can probably tell from my tone of voice, but JK, where do you stand with Where's My Ring?
You know, it's interesting, right? She's a little bit, to me, like resilience. We talked about resilience being a horse who's adding blinkers late, you know, kind of in the 3-year-old year. And so what you saw from that horse previously probably wasn't the truth of what that horse actually was. I think she's very similar, right? She added blinkers, and she's run well in 3 races since adding blinkers. She ran extremely well 3 races back. In the Santa Isabel, when she ran into that Baffert horse, she ran well that day. She just got beat, got a faster number, a lifetime best number. And then when she got to New York, she actually took another step forward. She's run 3 lifetime bests in a row. Lifetime bests, then she bested that, then she's bested that. Now she was comfortable on the inside in a inside draw like this. You'd like to think that she'll shut off if she needs to. And we're obviously going to root for our friends at Lane's End Farm. With Twirling Candy. Twirling Candy having an outstanding year so far, this being one of his runners that we'll see. I think she's definitely live. So far, the horses we've discussed, I think she's the most likely of the first three we've talked about.
We'll continue our Gazelle recap. Is it an Oaks preview or a Gazelle recap? You tell me. With number four, Regulatory Risk. This horse ran pretty well, I thought, in the Gazelle, all things considered. Big step up off of the previous efforts. Didn't really trouble the winner in that spot. Based on the previous efforts, hard to come up with much of a case that she's going to be up to a test like this. The biggest win did come with an easy lead. This is a horse that needs to step up, but I will say this about Regulatory Risk, certainly in the right hands to step up for a spot like this.
Well, a lot of these, you know, and I didn't say this about Where's My Ring, but I'll say it about Regulatory Risk. One of the things about the Gazelle is it is at a mile and an eighth. So while a lot of these horses will be answering that question for the first time, these two horses won't. They've run, you know, faster numbers in a race that's a mile and an eighth, so you know that they'll handle the distance. The other thing about Chad Brown-trained horses is they learn pretty early to sit on the bridle and wait for their rider's cues, which is a weapon you'd like to have in a mile and an eighth race. She's interesting. Once again, not one that I'm going to be cutting in line to bet to win, but definitely one that runs second or third. I'm not going to be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe Regulatory Risk ran second. She definitely deserves to be in the race, but also not one that makes me warm and fuzzy as one who might get the lilies draped over her back.
Let's talk about number five, JK. That's Torpedo Anna. She made her return to the race as a winning one in the fantasy, drew off looking visually impressive, and also won in a good time. This horse just cost $40,000, which is obviously not quite like some of the ridiculously valuable at sale type runners in this race. But I don't know. Does that preclude her from doing well in a race like the Oaks? This horse has been working well, and I've got to call her a contender, even if one that I'd put in like the 6-to-1 range. And I think that's probably just going to be about the price. But this is a horse I really want to get your opinion on.
Well, first of all, like I just mentioned, she's got to answer the question about the mile and an eighth. She ran well last time, right? I thought she got a pretty soft trip, a pretty easy trip. She's one of those horses that kind of looks like six other horses where they're all kind of those upper 80s, lower 90s types where if they get the right trip and they wake up on the right side of the bed and the sun hits the right part of the track, they can win. But there's not a whole lot to grab onto. There's not a whole lot I can give you and tell you a story about how Torpedo Anna's going to win. I tell you, Brian Hernandez is a part of the narrative. He's outstanding. He makes phenomenal decisions. Richie Migliori said it on the Monster podcast we did talking about Mystic Dan, that he thinks that Brian Hernandez is a top five rider in this country that doesn't get the credit for being a top five rider in this country. So that's definitely in her corner as well. She's just one of those that if she wins, she beats me. But I wouldn't be shocked. I just can't have all these horses that look exactly the same.
Right. And you're speaking of it more from a horizontal betting point of view. I think if you were looking, you don't bet a lot of verticals, I know, but if you did, I mean, this would certainly be one. And the Hernandez angle, you know, when you have a rider, a good underrated rider with local knowledge, those can be very good horses to toss in underneath. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Cause you know, you're going to get a good trip. Right. And I said, she's a formidable horse. So with the right trip, she can definitely be there late and she'll be a little bit ignored. I think she'll be a bigger price than 6-to-1.
All right, well, that's all encouraging for vertical play there. We'll talk about number six, Lemon Muffin, trained by the venerable one, Dwayne Lucas, won the maiden in the Honey Bee back at a time when the barn was absolutely flying, seemed to regress in the fantasy, has earned the place in the field, but with so many fast fillies for me, this is one who looks on the outside looking in.
Yeah, no interest for me, and I'm not, you know, I'm more of a Lime guy. Anyways, I think it's probably growing up in Texas, but these recent trips to Italy have kind of brought the Lemon back a little bit for me. So it's coming back, but I have no interest in a Lemon Muffin, and I don't necessarily have interest in this horse either. I think two times ago was the time, but I bet she'll run a lot the rest of the year.
I'm surprised we didn't get a Limoncello reference in there, knowing your newfound Italian connection and that amazingly fun weekend we had over there just about a year ago. We'll proceed with number seven, Fiona's Magic. This one looked like a potential Oaks player after the upset win in the Devona Dale, but I think she pretty much had her things her own way that day, being able to have an easy lead. The wheels came off in the Gulfstream Park Oaks when challenged, first to quit in that speed duel. This is not going to be an easy pace situation with the likes of Where's My Ring and Into Champagne. And as such, Fiona's Magic feels like one I will probably be betting against. Am I underrating her?
I don't think you're underrating her. I agree with everything you said. I do think that the recency bias that we see in horse racing often will have her ignored based on her last run. But it wasn't like, you know, one of those situations where it's not like she ran, got beat, and ran a 72 buyer. Like, she just didn't really run. And a lot of those times in those situations, I have no problem putting a line through it. You know, maybe she stepped on a rock. Maybe she had a cold. Maybe she, you know, had some issue that prevented her from running her best that day. But if you look at her previous runs, she deserves to be a shorter price than she's likely going to be. A type that I would definitely try to spice up some exotics with underneath, but not necessarily a win candidate.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's going to be all about how that pace battle develops. We'll get to that when we get to our conclusion of this video /audio, if you're listening, once we get through that. I do want to take a moment, though, to tell people we do have a ton of great content up on the YouTube channel with more to come this week. Get on there, subscribe to the In the Money Media channel. Make sure you click that notification bell as well so you don't miss any of the content we're pumping out. We're going to keep that going too. I mean, obviously, Derby, a main focus, Breeders' Cup, a main focus, but we've had such interest in it. I'm sure we're going to keep some cool videos coming throughout these summer months as well that we're eagerly anticipating. Let's get back to these fillies in the Kentucky Oaks with number 8, Tarifa, runner who's 4 of 5 lifetime, run some fast figures, beaten some tough fillies on the bloodlines. You would think age and distance are going to continue to be your friend. This looks like a legitimate Oaks favorite to me in terms of figures and form, but it's not an easy assignment against this level of competition. And for me, the 7-2, 3-1 that she's going to be, I'm sort of expecting just to be the price. I'm still sort of on the fence of how much I'm going to be mixing her in, but there's no way she isn't a contender by any definition, I would think. How much do you like Tarifa?
Yeah, I mean, I like her a lot. I mean, she deserves to be the favorite. You know, but she's not stand out enough to just kind of lean on her and just to say she's the best horse. But I just have a hard time really kind of leaning on her in this situation. And I think that your point you made earlier about me being more of a horizontal player and making sure you catch the winner for the Oaks, whether you're playing the very underrated Oaks Derby double, whether you're paying a lot of these multi-race wagers, these 2-day pick sixes, things like that, that, you know, involve this race. It is the Oaks. It is the female version of the Derby. It's on Friday and it's a big day. We want to be involved. She's a horse that I'll definitely use. She's tactical. She's got Brad. She's got Flavian. She's drawn well for this. She's overcome adversity. She can go quickly. She's got some nice pace numbers. She checks every box except for the fact that, like, this race just feels a little bit more interesting than just her. And that's kind of where my holdup is. She's definitely one that I'll use as an A. She's definitely a one that will be on every ticket, but it's not a single ice cold single and move on like the male version of this race is starting to feel like towards me.
We talked about the content we've got coming up this weekend. One really fun thing we're doing in conjunction with our partners at Daily Racing Form and America's Best Racing. And maybe you're even watching this as part of Derbython, but if you're listening beforehand, Wednesday at noon, the coverage starts between our three entities. We're going to have 24 hours of Derby coverage with a thick dose of In the Money Media in there, including the whole Monster Pod and some live coverage that you're not going to find anywhere else. Specifically, our final answer show. JK already has tipped his hand about who he'll be picking as his Derby final answer, but we'll be going through the whole pick 5 there. And it's going to be a great show. You can buy tickets if you're in Lexington and come join us live. If you're watching this during Derbython, it's probably too late, but who knows? There might be something last minute. InTheMoneyPodcast.com/event, the place to go to buy tickets live. If not, watch it as part of Derbython. It's going to be a blast. We're raising money for some great charities. You'll hear all about those during other parts of the broadcast. And, you know, I like putting our money where our mouth is, JK. You know, we talk a lot about people in this industry often, you know, fighting for their own little corner of the pie and not trying to work with others and make the pie bigger. One thing about Derbython, I love the fact that, you know, these entities like America's Best Racing with Dan Torchman over there specifically, and DRF and Rich Rosa getting to do more fun stuff with them. I'm all about it.
Absolutely. You know, getting involved and kind of having multiple entities pushing out good content, I think it's a smart way to promote the sport.
And all for a great cause, or several great causes. I'm sure we'll be flashing up on the screen pretty much constantly where you can go to donate. I think it's going to be drf.com/derbython. I'll take a guess and throw that URL out there in the world. Please help us out and enjoy the show. Speaking of the show, it goes on with a discussion of number 9 in these Kentucky Oaks. That's Everland making her dirt debut here. That's not an easy place to do that. I didn't see much, JK, going through the tape on Everland to suggest she can be competitive at this level. Though I will say this, on the bloodlines, you would think dirt would be okay. But I got to be honest, this former maiden claimer, reformed maiden claimer, maybe I'll say, would be a shock to me at least.
If Jonathan Thomas decided to run this course at Kentucky Downs on the dirt, on the turf, fly up to Toronto, run on the synthetic, run a synthetic in Cincinnati at Turfway, and then drop for a tag, it's enough for me to realize this horse likely can't stand up on dirt. I'll pass.
Number 10 is Into Champagne. Started her career a perfect 2-for-2 in sprint races. And then I thought going long ran a little bit better than it looked. That second to Fiona's Magic, I think, is okay form. And then reversed that form in the Gulfstream Park Oaks, proving the best of speed there before getting swamped by the closers. Could lead this early. Could be part of the pace factor for sure. Will she be able to hold off those good closers again on the Big Tay? I'm not so sure. In the end, I left Into Champagne as a hunch play for Rupert Holmes fans. If you know that song, JK, Escape, the Pina Colada song. I am Into Champagne. No acknowledgement. Okay. Anyway, those of you who get it, get it.
You know, I don't know music from people that have full names. We've talked about this before. You know, I think she's interesting, right? I think she is an interesting type that, you know, if you were doing that kind of, I know Travis Stone likes to talk about this. He's done it before. And Nick Tamaro plays this way. I don't think Jack Jenkins does too often, but some other players that we know and respect that kind of like reverse key where you find a horse, key him in third and fourth and the super. I think this is a wonderful horse to do that with, right? She's forward. Ian Wilkes horses continue to improve. They're usually the next race they run is the best race they're going to run. I thought she ran sneaky well in that race down in Gulfstream with Ways and Mean and Power Squeeze. I think she's very interesting underneath. Once again, not one that I envision getting her picture taken. I just think there might be 3 or 4 really talented horses in this race that are going to probably overtake her when they get a little bit closer to the wire. But I think she's very interesting. Not a horse I would ignore. A horse I'd love to have as a B type in multi-race wagers, right? Not even a C, a B type, where if she wins at 12-1 or 14-1 or whatever it is, I'm going to pick up some pieces there. But not one that I love, but definitely one that I'll use.
I was saving this question for the verdict part later, but I think I'll ask it now. The way you speak about her, I'm taking a guess that you think she's going to prove to be the best speed, and then it's just a question of if the closers come get her. I mean, of the speed types, is she the one that you like the best, would you say?
Yeah, I think she'll be forward, and that's not really Ian Wilkes' style too, right? He's like, you know, I mean, obviously Fort Lauderdale was forward, but like he's not one that's going to like pin them away from there, these young horses, and run them off their feet. I think she's doing that naturally with talent. So I think she's very interesting as a horse to use, which should be a pretty nice price.
Number 11 is Ways and Means. We look at that same form line. This one looked like an Oaks contender as far back as last summer, I'd say, JK, when she made that debut run that had the jaws on the floor up there at Saratoga. Obviously, things haven't gone to plan since then. We didn't win the second race at Saratoga, and that preceded a long trip to the bench. But boy, was I impressed with her comeback race. Just, to me, ran out of gas, as you might expect from off a long layoff with a bigger goal, namely this race, in mind. You know, Chad can bring him back fully formed, but he also doesn't squeeze the lemon when there's a bigger target coming up. I'm shocked at how good the prices are on this one in the UK. You ain't going to see no 9-1 on the tote, but if you're an international viewer, that's a good price. Let's just put it that way. I think Ways and Means is very appealing and definitely one on my short list. Are you still on the bandwagon for Ways and Means?
Yeah, I fully am. I think there'll probably be a little bit of value there as well. Like she's gonna take some attention, but there's gonna be a lot of people that don't believe because of the obstacle that she's had to face. I'm gonna say this. I've said it before on these airways. I'll say it again. Hanging out one morning by Chad Brown's barn at Saratoga before these horse ever ran, some people were talking about a couple of Pletcher runners that could be really good fillies, and a couple of these and a couple of that. And Chad very boastfully said they better be, because I might have one of the best dirt horses I've ever trained. It's this Practical Joke filly. And then his exercise rider came by. He asked him, hey, you know, they say they got this horse that might be pretty good. What do you think? He says they better take a good look at her in the gate, because it's the last time they're going to see her. and she performed that way, like that horse in her debut. Then she did come back, and look, she had some issues. She was injured in that race. If you remember, on the backside, there was a little bit of a check and a stumble on the backside when she lost the spinaway, and she was injured in that race. She had all this time off. She came back in the Oaks, had a horrible trip in the Oaks, ran well off in that comeback race. I think she's primed to run her best race ever. If she runs her best race ever, it's supposed to be 100 buyer-ish. And if she runs 100 buyer-ish, then she could get those Oaks draped over her shoulders. I think she's a very talented horse, a very interesting horse, and one that will be on every ticket. There'll be A's everywhere. And I'm very certain that she's going to be my selection to win the 2024 Kentucky Oaks.
We'll move on to a filly who just beat the filly we just spoke about in glowing terms. That's number 12, Power Squeeze. She was the perfect trip winner of that Gulfstream Park Oaks, a race where, as we've noted, Ways and Means had all manner of trouble. Power Squeeze ran a good figure that day, certainly belongs in the betting, a horse that makes sense. But I just can't shake the feeling, JK, that last time was the time for Power Squeeze, and Ways and Means is supposed to move forward and past her. What do you think of Power Squeeze?
Really, it's pretty straightforward thoughts. I mean, I think she got an advantageous situation when Ways and Means had a little bit of trouble, but she did beat a very talented horse in Ways and Means. She's undefeated going a mile or longer. She's on a four race win streak, so she likes to get her picture taken, and the distance shouldn't be a problem for her. And look, I think she's interesting. I think she definitely can be involved in the late stages of this race. I think some of the big girls have to not show up in order for her to win, kind of what happened in her last race, right? Ways and Means kind of had that trouble. She'll be right there with a chance to win. And definitely want to shout her out and our friends at Lane Zinn, a daughter of Union Rags. You don't want to trade places with anyone when you're on a four-race win streak and you're winning races around a mile or higher. I think Power Squeeze is interesting underneath. Not a cut in line to better to win type, but definitely one that I'd love to have as like a B or a C in multi-race wagers.
Number 13 is Just FYI, your two-year-old champion. She suffered her first defeat in the Ashland, but in doing so, did something she'd never done before, JK, and that's run a truly fast race on the clock. So the question then becomes, is she one that's likely to step up second time off the layoff and confirm the quality that made her a two-year-old champ and confirm that she has now this new dimension of being a truly fast runner? Well, I'll tell you what, with Bill Mott calling the shots, how many times on these airwaves we talk about Bill Mott with a target? This is the target, not the Ashland. I think you ignore Just FYI at your own peril in this spot, though some may still be questioning whether or not she's fast enough. Where do you stand?
Well, I'll invite everyone to close your eyes and pretend you're Bill Mott for a second and say to yourself, I have a two-year-old champion who was undefeated, and I'm gonna bring her back to the Ashland in April, and I'm going to have her fully ready to rock and roll. I'm going to get her to run her lifetime best race in the Ashland. And then open your eyes and realize that never happened. He said, I have a two-year-old champion who's never lost. I am going to set her up perfectly to run her lifetime best race and the biggest race of her career, the Grade One Kentucky Oaks. And that's exactly what he's going to do. She's going to take another step forward. She ran extremely well in the Ashland. Considering that situation, I think she's one of three horses that I believe can truly win this race, that are likely to win this race. She's one of them. I just worry her price is going to be a little bit shorter than I would like for it to be. And I believe that Tarifa and her are going to take money to make Ways and Means too much of an opportunity for me, but I have no problem. I would never argue with anyone about any of these three horses winning. And in fact, if someone annoys me enough and asks me who I like walking around somewhere, I might give them this horse.
What about the post? How much of a problem is it for a filly like Just FYI being out here in the 13th?
I mean, it's a long run to the first turn. They're going to spread themselves out in here. There's a lot of no-hopers in this race. And I think when there's a lot of no hopers or a lot of horses that really have to get lucky to win, I think their connections know that, is when you start getting fast paces, because horses get kind of just sent along. Like, what are you going to do? Sit behind a horse like Just FYI on Run Buyer? I don't think people feel that way. So I think the pace will be quick enough. I think they'll be spread out enough. I'm not too worried about her getting a nice trip from out there. It's pretty mischievous one. Or mischievous, excuse me, one from the 14 last year. I feel like the Cassius King horse, I'm going blank on her name, with the Fleet Alex Silks, I feel like she broke from the outside. Catherine Sophia, I want to say she was far out. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe she was the two. and I'm making things up, but I don't think it makes a difference.
Cardinal rule of broadcasting. You don't bring up things you don't know the answer to, especially when I've got, 15 balls in the air. I could probably come up with something here, but I'm empty. Speaking of the 14 post, though, we're going to go right to Leslie's Rose, this million-dollar baby who was a very impressive winner in the Ashland, making up for that odds-on defeat in the Devona Dale. Looked like a completely different animal to me in Kentucky, and I think you have to consider her a contender, even from the potentially difficult post. We just talked about the draw. It can be done, but I'm going to want a little bit better of a price to involve a horse like Leslie's Rose in my wagers. As the Ashland winner, I don't know that you're going to see the price that I need, but I'm still intrigued by this one. I don't want to dismiss her out of hand. Where did you land on Leslie's Rose?
Well, first of all, Catherine Sophia was the 12. I was right about that. So I wanted to make sure I got that out there. And also, Untappable was the 13 and Plum Pretty was the 12. So I don't think there's any problems being drawn towards the outside. Leslie's Rose is fine. I thought she ran extremely well last time. Felt like kind of got the run of the race. She's also going to be kind of wide around there. And I don't mind taking a horse that I love wide, because then I feel like that horse is talented enough to overcome a wide trip if it happens. But I do not like taking horses that I like that are wide, because, if they don't get that perfect trip, they're only like types, not love types. That's kind of how I feel about Leslie's Rose. I think she'll be bet. I think I'll try to beat her. I think maybe there's some value in trying to beat her. You can't use all the logicals, although I think this is going to be a formful race. She's going to be one that I'll probably let beat me.
We have 2 minutes left, and we've got two horses, but they're AEs, and the verdict to get to, JK. So just really quickly, anything to say about Our Pretty Woman or Candied? For me, Our Pretty Woman, possible pace factor, but I don't love, and I feel like Candied, it would be a long shot should she somehow draw in. Anything more on either of those?
Yeah, I mean, real quick, I mean, Our Pretty Woman, it does have a pace scenario from out there. And, Joel, he finds himself on the front end often. And if that happens, I think that she's interesting. Candy, excuse me, she's got some back class, but she hasn't really shown up as of late. Maybe she kind of gets in and figures it out all of a sudden. But no, I think those two don't concern me too much. But I'd like to think that one of them will get in, just the way that things have been trending and racing. With a lot of the kind of the changes in regulations, you'd like to think that they're going to be pretty tough with the decisions that are made in terms of who's going to be running and not running. And you'd like to think that one of these might sneak in.
We've just got a minute left. I'm picking Ways and Means, the 11 runner in this spot. For me, 13, just FYI, that's my other A runner. I'm going to look to use the 14, Leslie's Rose, and the 8, Tarifa, more as B types and ones to mix in the exotics. Give us your approach to how you're going to play this year's Kentucky Oaks, and let's get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Ways and Means will be my top choice. Just FYI, another one I think is very interesting I'll use as kind of a secondary. Tarifa's not going to beat me on that A-line. It's a horse I got to have based on some other opinions I want to make sure I get to in terms of that two-day pick six, same-day pick six, pick fives, all those types of things. Power Squeeze and Into Champagne are horses that I will try to get cute with underneath as B-types, underneath types, or even kind of some long shot hopes in case, something goes wrong. Look, Dreaming of Julia, I thought she couldn't lose, and she ran fourth, if I'm not mistaken.
We're out of time. Appreciate you, JK. For much more on this Oaks card and the Derby card, undercard races, etc., make sure you check out that Final Answers show. You can watch it as part of Derbython. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel and click that notification bell and make sure you don't miss it that way either. That's going to be streaming live at 7 on Wednesday, also going to be live as part of Derbython. Want to remind folks about the Kentucky Derby Challenge. Great way to play on Kentucky Derby Day. Watch your name go up the leaderboard. This one comes from our friends at FirstBet and ExpressBet, the leaders in contest play. ExpressBet.com/tournaments, the place to go to learn more about this one. It's a $3,000 bankroll and a great chance to turn your Kentucky Derby Day into something even more memorable. Learn more, expressbet.com/tournaments. Also, just want to shout out our friends at Hawthorne Racecourse. It's been fantastic to have them back in the mix here. They're racing on weekends right now. They have a great contest schedule. If you go to the HawthorneRacecourse.com website, you can see the full schedule and also the other opportunities available for contests. PTF and JK back with you with our video about the Kentucky Derby pace and, by extension, the Kentucky Derby draw. New info since the last time we did a Derby video.
JK, let's just start with the lead. We've talked, both of us, on these videos so much about fierceness, how he's the most brilliant member of the class, how we believe if he runs his A race, they ain't going to beat him. He draws in the 17. Now, I don't know if it's necessarily where I would have picked for him to draw, but I'm curious what you think of this 17 draw for fierceness. How does that affect him? How does that affect the pace of this year's Kentucky Derby?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would have picked 17, 18, 19, or 20 for him. He's a horse that, in my opinion, is the best horse in the race. He's tactical. He likes to be forward. I think he likes to see racetrack in front of him and being drawn out there. And his trainer is comfortable in having horses sit in the 2 and 3 path, sitting off of paces. Like, that's just what Todd Pletcher will do. And frankly, his rider, Johnny Velasquez, has won a majority of his big races riding horses like that. I've got no problem with being drawn in the 17. He'll have all the riffraff to his inside. If they want to do a little grab fest down there on the inside, worrying about getting the distance, I have no problem with him making the lead and galloping around there very similarly that he did in the Florida Derby. But I also feel comfortable that if someone does want to be aggressive to the inside, that he can sit outside on the clear. And the worst thing that can happen to the best horse in the race is he can end up 3 or 4 wide, which, considering the Kentucky Derby, that's the least of your worries when talking about what bad things can happen to you in the Derby. You can get stopped. You can get checked. You can get stuck in behind horses. You can get carried out into the 97 path. I think that he'll be able to avoid a lot of those situations based on where he's at.
To clarify my statement, going in, I wouldn't have necessarily picked the 17, but my fear with the 17 would have been that you might have a faster horse in 18, 19, or 20. I don't think you have that here. I think he's drawn outside the other main speed. That's where I think he needs to be. I mean, I suppose he could get hung a little bit wider than he wants, depending on what happens in this pace, but I love being drawn outside the other speed. The analogy I use on the In the Money airwaves often is, for the jockey, it's like sitting on the button in poker. Other people have to play their hands before you do. I think it gives a tactical advantage. And look, I think he needs to break cleanly, probably to win. But from out there, as opposed to down inside, even a half step slow break, he's got such acceleration. I think he could still maybe even overcome not the best break. He ain't going to overcome a bad break, but I think he can overcome not the best break and still get into position. While we're talking about fierceness, I want to show a tape of the Florida Derby, not the closing stages where we've seen him run away from the field, but the early stages of the race. What I think is interesting about this, Jonathan, is just how easily fierceness makes the lead. It looks to me very early on in the piece here, John Velasquez is ready to move his hands and ask him to get to the lead. It becomes apparent that that's not going to be necessary. And at that point, he sort of takes him in hand at just his natural speed. He goes to the lead. Fierceness is not being ranked. To me, he's listening to his rider. He's not acting like a need the lead. Everything has to go perfect horse. He's acting like a push button horse who could have gone faster to get to that lead. And I believe still been within himself. We all know what he did in terms of the final time, the giant speed figure. If he can sort of work with Johnny as he did in that clip and make his own trip, that's just another thing that leads me to this favorite. Where do you think he'll be positioned early on in this year's Kentucky Derby?
I think he'll be forward. I think he'll be first, second, or third. I think someone potentially could go, and based on where he's drawn, I think Johnny will let him go. But I also think that if fierceness is natural ability, is natural talent, that horse that ran a triple-digit buyers on a number of occasions, if that horse pops away from there and finds himself on the front end, Hall of Famer Johnny Velasquez is not going to grab him and put him behind a horse. He's going to let him cruise on the front end. We've seen what he'll do if he makes the front end. We saw what he did in the Florida Derby, making the front end, record-breaking performance. There's this idea that he's a tricky horse to ride. I don't think that's the case. I think that he didn't appreciate the circumstances of the Champagne. He came back in the Juvenile and ran off the screen against an unbelievable group of horses. Then he comes back in the Holy Bull on what was a not primed and fully pumped to run his best race performance, where of course it didn't matter what trip he got. He wasn't going to run his best race that day. And then he shows up in the Florida Derby ready to rock and roll and does what he does. I think the pace is going to be slow. I think if you look at the other horses in the race, slow for the Derby's, the Derby standards, you look at the other horses in the race, horses like Track Phantom, Door Knock, other horses that could be forward. Trap Phantom's got distance questions. They're not going to send him away from there aggressively. Door Knock to me isn't that tactically fast. He does find the front end from time to time. I just don't think they're going to go out there and go 47 flat or 46. There's no Baffert horses in the race who typically speed it up. There's no there's not a Brad Cox runner who doesn't get in the way of his horse's speed that is really, really fast, right? I know Encino made the lead, but he's also going to be going a mile longer than a mile and a 16th for the first time in his life. I don't think they're going to send him away from there aggressively. I think the pace is going to be slow, but I don't care if it's fast. I think that Fierceness is going to end up working out a pretty nice trip from where he's at.
I think it's going to be faster than what you're saying, but I agree. I don't think it's going to be historically fast or anything. We have the Timeform US pace projector we'll share from our friends over there, Timeform US, a key tool that you and I both use. And it's interesting going through and trying to figure it out. They've got the two runners at the top, Just a Touch, and as well as Track Phantom with Dornock not far behind. Perhaps Dornock down on the inside, if he breaks well, I suppose he has no choice but to go forward. That's the kind of thing that could make it a fast pace. But I do think it's interesting that in workouts, it looked to me like neither Dornock nor Track Phantom were being asked for a ton of speed in the sense of maybe horses they were worried about getting that Derby distance. So, you know, maybe that's get out to the front and hang on. That leaves us with Just a Touch as a horse to talk about as another potential front runner in this spot. Brad Cox has three in here. Do you think there's a chance, JK, that we will see team tactics with, you know, one of them whose mission is to have their best chance going to the lead, you know, another maybe sitting, another coming from farther back? What kind of instructions do you imagine the triumvirate of the Cox horses are going to get in this race?
Yeah, forgive my sarcasm. I can see Brad Cox calling Sheikh Mohammed and saying, hey, look here, we're going to go ahead and just send your horse out of there pretty fast. We're going to set him up pretty nicely for one of my other horses. So I hope you don't mind that. Thanks a lot, Your Highness. Like, this doesn't happen, right?
I wasn't suggesting that. Very often with team tactics, it's because certain horses do their best work from different positions on the track, whether that's front running, stalking, or closing.
I think that Encino and Just a Touch will be forwardly placed. Neither one of them aggressively ridden to make the front, but forwardly placed like Brad Cox runners often are. I think Catching Freedom is going to try to get his position moving forward, but he is naturally a slower horse, so he's going early, so he's going to be a little bit further back. I don't think he'll be out the back like he has been. I think that's just kind of a nature of how his races have run. I don't think there'll be team tactics at all, especially with different ownerships. I just think that they're all going to kind of run their race. Encino Just a Touch forward, Catching Freedom as close as he's comfortable, and then allowing him to finish.
It's a half mile into the Kentucky Derby. Who's on the lead?
I think Fierceness is going to be on the lead. And I think the fraction's going to be like, you know, 48 and one, 48 flat, 47 and four. I think that Johnny's going to send away from there. And I think that there's a chance in which he can kind of intimidate some of the others that they might take back a little bit, not wanting to eyeball the best horse in the race all the way around there. And I could see him being on the front end with reasonable fractions.
I love that scenario for him. I'll take an absolute guess and say maybe it's T.O. Password, a runner like that, a big long shot, but, you know, maybe connections out to get a run for the money. We've seen foreign horses in the Kentucky Derby often show more speed than you would have guessed. I don't think that would hurt Fierceness at all if he could be out there. And I don't mind the idea of Fierceness with a target. We saw how well that worked in a race like the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. But he's one that doesn't appear on the Timeform US pace projector that I could see being out there. I know you don't think it's going to be a closer scenario. I think it's going to be more closers coming to fill in the spots after Fierceness burns off all the other speed. But I do want to quickly touch on at least one closer, Sierra Leone. For me, I feel like the two draw is not ideal. I feel like he's a little bit too inside. I think it might take away their ability to try to get position going forward and sit and force them maybe even more out the back than they want to be. And of course, you can always get caught in that cavalry charge going into the first turn. Look, I'm not meaning it's going to kick Sierra Leone off my tickets, but I don't love the draw. I think it's worth at least talking about. What do you think of the draw for Sierra Leone?
It doesn't bother me at all. I mean, if he broke from the 10, he would break away from there and then slowly try to take a left turn to end up in the two or the three path. Well, he just starts there. He's out the back anyways. I don't see any problem with it.
Great stuff. We've got so much more Derby coverage coming up. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of it, two things, really. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Click the notification bell. Also, sign up for our free email, inthemoneypodcast.com/email. Going to have updates on all the great stuff we've coming down the pike this week, including our final answer show. Join us live as part of Derbython. You can give generously to some important charitable causes and watch 24 hours of Derby coverage starting on Wednesday at 1 o'clock. To learn more, drf.com/Derbython. And no, I did not say those letters incorrectly. It's you know, you stick around long enough, you live to see everything. PTF and JK collaborating with DRF and America's Best Racing. Once again, make sure you check that out. For JK, I'm PTF. Enjoy the rest of our Kentucky Derby and Oaks content,
both here and on our YouTube channel and through our free newsletter, inthemoneypodcast.com/email. One more sponsor must be heard from before we wrap things up today. That's our friends over at Free Reign Coffee. As you know, if you've been watching our videos, I'm a huge fan of this stuff. Been really enjoying it in the French press. Did a little cold brew version the other day. That worked well. Still looking forward to a chance to go visit my mom on Long Island and check out the pods. She's a big fan. But whether you're looking for grounds or pods or whole beans, Free Reign Coffee have you covered, or cool merch. We've had some people say, hey, we want to support you. We know we support you when we support your sponsors. And they bought cool t-shirts and hats, the likes of which I've been wearing on some of these videos. We have a site-wide discount right now. Money20 gets you 20% off site-wide. We encourage you to check it out and join in with this delicious coffee, especially during a week like this and really the whole Triple Crown season where horse players need to get up and get after it. It's a lot easier to do that with Free Reign in your cup, freereigncoffee.com. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. Want to thank JK for putting in the time and doing these videos with us. Should mention there's also a YouTube-only video about some research we did, thanks to our friend Eric Bylick, about how you can try to make $100,000 at this year's Kentucky Derby, something that I've never done, but JK actually has. So you're going to want to tune in and hear what he has to say on that one over on the YouTube channel. Do us a favor and subscribe while you're over there. Click that notification bell to make sure you never miss an episode. Lots of cool, exclusive YouTube content coming down the pike for the rest of 2024 as well. Let's thank our founding partners, 10 Strike Racing. You know how around here we always love to root for the purple and black. Also, Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga, which is where Kim Weir is plying her trade these days, helping humans and helping horses. Learn more about their mission. Give generously to their cause. InTheMoneyPodcast.com/horses. Thanks, though, most of all to all of you for listening and making these shows so much fun to do. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatal. May you win all your photos.